In 2015, a Nobel Prize was awarded to William C. Campbell for the discovery of the drug ivermectin. In 2021, big government, big pharma, and big media are doing everything possible to prohibit ivermectin. And so we ask, if we follow the COVID money, will it lead us away from ivermectin?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1288th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Cairo who are tuned into the podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, William C. Campbell was awarded a 2015 Nobel Prize in Physiology for the discovery of a drug therapy to fight infections caused by parasites. Campbell's drug, ivermectin, is now prescribed to millions of people throughout Africa to fight river blindness.
Yes, exactly.
Onchocerciasis is river blindness. Well, according to a recent study by Johns Hopkins, the prophylactic use of ivermectin throughout Africa has demonstrated a major side effect. Those countries that use ivermectin have a much lower mortality rate from COVID-19 than do the countries that do not use ivermectin. Wow, plain as the numbers. The principal difference between the two kinds of countries appears to be money. Those countries that use ivermectin are relatively poor, while those countries who do not use ivermectin are relatively affluent. There is now an all-out war being conducted in the United States to prohibit the use of the Nobel-winning ivermectin to fight COVID-19. Those wanting to prohibit its use include the Food and Drug Administration, the Center for Disease Control, most all of the nation's legacy media, and most all of the nation's new media. The key to understanding why the establishment is so intent on prohibiting ivermectin may be found in a federal government law entitled Emergency Use Authorization of Medical Products and Related Authorities. This law leads us to ask, if we follow the COVID money, will it lead us away from ivermectin? Who better to ask than Dr. Michael Arnold, who is a author of How to Save Your Loved Ones from COVID. Welcome to the Food Chain, Doctor.
Thank you, Michael.
Well, this should be very interesting. Everybody is pointing in one direction, and Dr. Michael Arnold is pointing in the other direction. Does it frighten you that you're pointing in the other direction when everybody is saying, go this way, and you're saying, no, let's go that way?
I'm not alone in that view, which is my medical opinion, arrived at by careful consideration of the available evidence. Nevertheless, I am frightened by the pressures which various government agencies and commercial interests are bringing on the doctors in general, and especially any doctor who has the nerve to speak out against the narrative that there's nothing whatsoever you can do for COVID except to get the jab.
Get the jab. Take the jab. Do the jab. So you were a medical doctor. What kind of doctor were you?
I'm a general practitioner, and then I got a master's degree in traditional Chinese medicine, and I practiced alternative medicine for most of my career.
Okay.
I spent some time in ERs and urgent cares, and I also did some workers' compensation work, but really it was the alternative medicine, acupuncture, Chinese herbs, healing by Qigong, healing by meditation. That's the ground on which I stand.
Okay, but you have feet in both areas, so
yes.
You can stand in both if you so desire. Good. Well, you're best known, I believe, for being a proponent of the Bates method or vision management. Give us a thumbnail about the Bates method.
The Bates method was developed by an ophthalmologist in the 1920s who discovered that you didn't really need glasses if you could just learn to relax your eyes. That's the thumbnail of the Bates method. And it's a constant tension in the eyes from using them in an unnatural way.
For example, let me guess. Like what? Looking at a computer all day?
Yeah, where you're always focused at the same distance that creates the various eye problems. And he developed techniques for releasing that tension.
Wow. Okay. And you have this magnificent book you edited called...
Perfect Vision.
Perfect Vision. Yeah. Easy to remember. Okay, Perfect Vision. So how did you come to write a book entitled How to Save Your Loved Ones from COVID?
Well, that's an interesting story. I retired about 5 years ago, maybe seven, and I was looking forward to a quiet life. And I wasn't practicing medicine anymore, but I was doing what I call informational consultation, which means if somebody wanted to call me up and say, gee, you know, I was just diagnosed with, say, rheumatoid arthritis, and the doctor wants me to take this medicine, and I don't know if it's such a good idea. I was the guy who could look into Western medicine and look into alternative medicine and kind of get a global view and say, well, here's your options, and, you know, based on your intuition, your belief system, and your right to choose as an informed patient, these are the various paths you can take. Personally, I might do this, but it's totally up to you. So I was doing that, and a gentleman called me up right at the beginning of the COVID epidemic, and he said, what's going on with this? I want you to check this out. I want you to look at this. And I'm like, well, okay, you know, I don't know what's going on, but I'm retired, but I'll look into it. And then the more I looked into it, the more I saw confusion, deceit, the inculcation of fear where no fear was needed. Down the rabbit hole. And in March, I think, I posted a video on my website, or it was an audio, I can't remember. And the title was Saying Goodbye to COVID, in which I said, hey, this is maybe at the level of a bad flu. If you're healthy, you don't need to be afraid of it at all. Just get healthy. And if you're not healthy, then fine. Shelter in place, as they say, you know, for the at-risk, the elderly, the obese, the people with diabetes and so on. You know, get out of the mainstream and get healthy. So
I just put in front of you a chart of deaths per million going back to, I think, 1854 all the way up to 2020. And, you know, at the end of the chart line is COVID. And COVID does not appear to be a big deal at all compared to some of the significant spikes we've had. And there's been a few of them. But COVID is kind of almost like an average year in deaths per million. Could that be true? I mean, it came from the World Health Organization.
The problem in these times is when you get a number, you can't really trust that number.
Ah.
So one of the first things I found in the COVID epidemic is, you know, I called up the gentleman I was consulting for and I said, well, wait a minute, this stuff doesn't cross-foot. It's not internally consistent. When you look at the statistics, there's no way that could be, right? And then what I found out is that they were exaggerating COVID deaths. So I said, oh, my God, could that really be? And, well, maybe that could be, but I'm not just going to believe what somebody wrote in a blog. So I started calling up my friends and doctors and saying, hey, if somebody dies in your institution, are you under pressure to call it a COVID death? And they're saying, oh, yeah, if I don't put COVID on the death certificate, I'm going to have a hospital administrator down here saying, what's your problem? Why didn't you put that? And then there's also, I discovered right away in the COVID epidemic, an incredible problem with the diagnostic aspect. So this is a PCR test that everybody talks about.
Yeah, what does PCR mean?
It means polymerase chain reaction. So basically, instead of looking for the virus, you're looking for not the RNA of the virus, it's an RNA virus. You're just looking for a little fragment of that RNA. And the thing is,
kind of like a bumper on a car that was in a car wreck.
Yeah, yeah.
Although laying on the road,
bumper would be, say, too big, you know.
Yeah, right.
It would be more like a little door handle, right, or a chip of paint, right? Okay. Chip of paint. That's about right. That level. And the inventor of the PCR test, and I believe he received a Nobel Prize too.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of Nobel Prize winners out in the cold these days. He said, and it says on the package insert, this is not to be used for the diagnosis of active disease. Any more than if you're walking down the street and you see a car handle lying on the ground, that doesn't mean there's a car anywhere near it. Right?
Yeah.
And then there's an additional problem with the COVID test, which is it cycles. So if you push it through enough cycles, you'll get a positive test off a mango, which is actually what happened. The president of Zimbabwe swabbed a mango and a goat, sent him in, and sure enough came back, oh yeah, these people have COVID.
And that's interesting because I just saw that I've been following populations of deer being diagnosed with COVID antibodies. And I'm thinking it must be everywhere. Those little bits and fragments must be just about everywhere because if you're finding them in deer populations.
Yeah.
So you're seeing these pieces of information that are just not making any sense. And so you go deeper down the rabbit hole.
Yes.
And deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yes.
Whew, okay. So, you know, when I started digging into this, and I've been looking at it very closely in terms of my food chain radio program here, because it is certainly an issue of the food chain. And, you know, when it first started, I was getting a routine checkup with my doctor, and I just said, hey, could I get a just-in-case prescription for ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine? And it was really interesting because it was like he had a physical reaction to my question. Jumped back in his chair. It was as if I asked him for a barrel of cocaine or heroin or something. And he was frightened. Why would a doctor be frightened of me asking for a just-in-case prescription for ivermectin?
I think it's important to understand that. And the basis of that is that a doctor's most precious asset is his or her medical license.
License.
And there's a thing called standard of care, which means this is how we do it. And you can go to the edge of standard of care, but once you go outside of standard of care, then you're sort of on your own. I think as soon as the controversy started to erupt about the general topic of early treatment of COVID, which means in the mainstream medical system, you have to wait till you're really sick to get treated.
Okay, we're going to pick that up when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Today we're talking about Dr. Michael Arnold's COVID protocol. And the title of his book is How to Save Your Loved Ones from COVID. Not a bad idea when it gets right down to it. How do we do that? Stay tuned.
let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Well, today, folks, we're walking on the wild side of with our COVID pandemic, because we're talking about a possible way of managing COVID that does not take into the conventional approach, which seems to be get a vaccine, get a jab, and shut up. So we're looking at a drug called ivermectin. Let's talk a little bit about ivermectin before we go on and get back to my paranoid doctor. Ivermectin is a drug that won the Pulitzer Prize.
The Nobel Prize, I believe.
Nobel Prize, yeah. The yeah. Nobel is the big one. It's the
big one.
One.
That's every scientist's dream.
Every scientist's dream. And it was awarded because Dr., what was his name?
I forget that one. Campbell?
William C. Campbell invented a drug that cures river blindness.
And a number of other parasitic infections.
And not only that, but it has changed Africa, because the poor nations of Africa have discovered that they could manage river blindness and all kinds of these parasite diseases with ivermectin. And so they've been prescribing ivermectin for years and taking these drugs for years and managing these diseases. Now, in looking at the countries of Africa that actually use ivermectin, the folks at, who was it, some institution discovered that those countries who were using ivermectin were suffering significantly less deaths from COVID-19 than those countries who were not using ivermectin, but who were using the prescribed modern technologies. Now, that's a huge deal, because it takes in a lot of people. And yet, in each country, the result was the same. So, you have a drug that has been approved for the use of managing one thing, but also a lot of other things. So this drug has been approved for alternate uses. And yet today, if you go and ask your doctor for ivermectin, what do they say?
They jump back in their chair. They have an anxiety attack. They mumble something and go running out of the room. I've had friends that got thrown out of the doctor's office, and the doctor said, I'm not treating you anymore.
Because they asked for ivermectin.
Because they asked for ivermectin.
Okay. So, why is ivermectin, why is the medical establishment, the government, the media, everybody,
the research establishment,
everybody so freaked out and panicked over this drug that has been used for years and won a Nobel Prize? What is the underlying cause?
Well, I believe ivermectin is effective in the early treatment of COVID, and the withholding of that medicine has caused a lot of people to die. So, as in any murder mystery, follow the money.
There you go.
And you mentioned earlier the EUA, the Emergency Use Authorization, under which the current genetic alteration jabs have been authorized. And I went in the federal government websites and I looked up the wording of the emergency use authorization. And what it says is no product is eligible for emergency use authorization if there is any treatment that has already passed FDA scrutiny. So if anybody admitted that ivermectin worked, then there would be billions of dollars lost by withholding of the emergency use authorization. From my point of view, it's that simple, and that the actors involved have enough money and enough grip on the government and enough grip on the media that they can mount a massive campaign to shut anybody up who has the nerve to say that ivermectin works, and so you're going to lose however many billion dollars that is.
So when I read that in your book, how to save your loved ones from COVID. I nearly fell out of my chair like the doctor who I asked for some ivermectin. That to me is not huge. It's monstrous, but because we're talking about billions, trillions of dollars.
Especially since it's a subscription. After selling the first round of jabs, right? 3 months later, they're like, oh, here comes the next one. You're going to have to sign up for that one too.
So if ivermectin were to be found an effective management tool for COVID, that would mean automatically that hundreds of billions and maybe even trillions of dollars would go down the drain for all of these people who are invested.
That is my clear understanding.
Well, that's not only a big wow, but that's a huge wow that pretty much describes why doctors are under such pressure to shut the bleep up.
Yeah, you have to understand that doctors value their license above all else. And
that's what they borrowed all the money for. That's what they spent all the years earning. And
yes.
And so if somebody says that this is the way we treat this, and they can't say anything else, they just follow the prescribed trail down through the jungle.
Well, it goes a little beyond that doctors intuitively understand that if they prescribe ivermectin or early treatment for COVID, they become a target, whether it's a target of a smear campaign by somebody who's paid by the financial interests involved to discredit anybody who speaks out, or it's a target of the medical board of whatever state they're in. So I spoke with a pharmacist who's an independent pharmacist, and I said, what do you think of this whole private conversation? What do you think of this whole ivermectin thing? You know, our doctors prescribing. He said, once a week, I get a call from some government official who says, how many prescriptions for ivermectin have you filled? And the pharmacist says, and I can hear the pencil scratching while they're writing down what I say. And who wrote them? So the doctors know intuitively that they would be targeted if they were openly opposing the mainstream narrative that's basically being jammed down people's throat, and all the other narratives are being censored. It's part of the censorship to shut up the doctors.
And if you shut off the doctors, there's no way to get ivermectin.
There are ways, and there's an appendix in my book, How to Get Ivermectin.
Don't tell anybody yet.
I won't say it.
You have to stay to the end of the show to figure out how to get it. All right. Now, Dr. Michael Arnold, you are retired.
Yes, sir.
So you're somewhat free to say what you want.
And what you'll find is that there's a growing cadre of medical experts, scientific experts, immunologists, PhDs, biochemists, Nobel Prize winners speaking out against the narrative that there's no treatment whatsoever for COVID, except wait until you're really, really sick and then go in the hospital and get on a ventilator. And that a lot of those folks are folks who would not lose their jobs, that would... that don't have to worry about that kind of thing. It's the retired people. It's just like Copernicus waited till he was dying before he challenged the church. And then he published what he had to say.
Now, this reminds me a lot of Mao Zedong's Smashing the Sparrows campaign. Have you ever heard of that? It was an element of his Four Pests campaign during the Great Leap Forward. And he decided to get rid of the four pests that were causing so much pestilence, and one of them was the rat, and another one was the cockroach and the mosquito, and the fourth one was sparrows. And sparrows were bad because Mao was told to eat all the grain. And so they killed a billion sparrows. He mobilized the whole nation to kill sparrows, and they killed all the sparrows. But then one day somebody thought, I wonder what sparrows eat. And so they biopsied a stomach of a sparrow, and lo and behold, they were eating locusts. And what happened? With all the sparrows gone, the locusts reigned free, and they 50 million people starved to death. Are we looking at something like that here?
In my opinion, yes. But I don't know the future, so you're just getting my opinion.
Yeah.
But you have to understand that the roots of this situation go back far. And the idea that the, first of all, the MD, medical doctor, took over the medical profession via the Flexner Report in like 1907 or 1910 and started to push out any other modality of treatment. And then, as pharmaceutical interests grew in power, the focus of medical treatment became less and less staying healthy, living a healthy lifestyle, getting
who can make money selling drugs to healthy people,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, okay. Exactly. And more and more, here's the pill, hurry up and give it, okay? And this country has a silent epidemic of incredible proportions of disease. So if you look at the indications that somebody's headed for diabetes, that's maybe 40% of the adult male population, right?
And we call these things pre-existing conditions.
Right, pre-existing conditions, which could be easily prevented and easily controlled in many cases. So the fact that a virus, which is actually coronaviruses in general, are one of the four most common causes of the common cold. And then there's the argument, well, is this one weaponized? So let's not go there. But the fact that something is coming along and picking off these people whose immune systems are already pretty much destroyed by a variety of factors like diabetes and immunocompromise and autoimmune disease and so on and so forth, something was going to come because we're all so unhealthy. And it's an unhealthy culture. They eat unhealthy food, right? They sit there, they watch TV, and half of the half of the advertising is, buy this thing, it'll make you totally sick. Pizza, potato chips, whatever. And the other half is, oh, here's a medicine for how sick you got from going with our other ads.
You sound like an alternative medicine doctor.
I am.
Dr. Arnold.
On that level.
Well, good. So now when people call up a doctor, as we left this conversation at the end of last break, but doctors are frightened now because their medical license is at risk. Who's going to take it away from them?
Well, let's see. I called my friend who works in a nursing home and also in a hospital, and who's a doctor who's pretty much on the same page as me. And I said, well, do you speak out? And she said, no. If I spoke out, I would lose my job. So basically, the hospital's going to crowd them out. Their employer is going to crowd them out. The medical board, this is another thing I did. I asked two of my friends. I said, I don't want to be visible, but could you please contact the medical board and ask them if it's okay if your doctor prescribes you ivermectin for COVID? And both of them did, and they never heard back, okay? So it's silent. It's not that the medical board is you know, saying if you prescribe ivermectin, we're coming after you. But the doctors know it, and the doctors believe it. And just like I said, the pharmacist, right, is saying, yeah, they're asking who's giving ivermectin. So basically, a lot of different vectors are going, and then the censure of the populace. So from my point of view, I don't think it's too extreme to say that based on the mainstream media and the deplatforming of any other stream of opinion, people are being brainwashed and then weaponized, that they're being weaponized to attack.
And if you don't agree, you go out and shout everybody down who's not saying the right thing.
Exactly. And unfortunately, there's certain marks of the rise of a totalitarian regime and the loss of freedom, right? And one is the censorship. Another is disinformation. A third is the creation of fear in the populace, because I don't think we need to be any more afraid of COVID than we are of a bad flu season. And
that's what it looks like on the chart. It looks like a relatively mild bad flu season.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like an extraordinarily bad flu season or even a moderately bad flu season. It looks like a slightly bad flu season in terms of deaths per million.
I agree.
And okay.
So then the final mark of a rise of a totalitarian regime is the targeting of a scapegoat group that everyone can blame. All this fear and confusion and uncertainty, which has been deliberately created by those trying to gain power. And so in, you know, before World War II, it was the Jews. And now it's the people who didn't get jabbed.
There you go. Gas chambers are next.
Or camps, right? Camps, isolation camps.
Like they have in Australia. That's what they're setting up in Australia. Well, okay, the heck with all of that. Let's go to the good part of your book, How to Save Your Loved Ones from COVID. And you kind of lay it out, four simple steps. And step number one is get healthy. What do we do?
Get healthy is, there's certain categories that I give. So first of all, you have to educate yourself. How would I do that? And this takes work, you know, but are you willing to work? How many hours a week? How many hours a week you're willing to work to pay your rent? You know, you have to pay the rent on your body. So first you have to start educating yourself. Secondly, you have to calm down. I'll tell you, it's interesting. The CDC came out a week ago or so and said, we looked at the risk factors of death if someone gets COVID. And the first risk factor, the highest risk is obesity. The second highest risk is any diagnosis of a psychiatric disorder that involves fear or anxiety. So the second step is calm down. However you're going to do
Breathe deep.
Breathe deep, meditate,
walk,
do yoga, go in nature, get with your friends, get a massage, listen to calming music.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, pick this up because love the idea of getting healthy. What do I have to do? This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What with the Dr. Michael Arnold and How to Save Your Loved Ones from COVID. In spite of everything everybody's trying to do to get you not to do exactly that. So do stay tuned and we will be right back with The Way.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Polyface Farms, Joel Salatin.
Few how-to books could be more appropriate for our times than MetroFarm, a truly comprehensive manual. MetroFarm makes the whole embedded food system doable. It's a must-read.
USDA Director Bud Kerr.
Big book. MetroFarm describes the agronomic, economic, and managerial concepts required to generate substantial profits from agricultural locales near metropolitan areas.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
Duke the Pug will soon turn 20, which is pretty good for a dog breed that averages 11 years. When Duke was 13, he lost a lot of hair, had a hard time getting up for a walk, and his bowel movements were not very moving. We started making his food instead of buying it. We cook up a big batch of rice, chicken, broccoli, carrots, and turmeric, freeze meal-sized batches, and thaw them at mealtime. We also sprinkle Arthrodex on each meal. Arthrodex is a complete blend of plant-derived minerals, vitamins, amino acids, and enzymes formulated to make old dogs young again. And it does. Duke the Pug does have his problems, but he has all his hair, loves daily walks, and has no problems with his movements. Breakfast is at 7, and if it's not there by 7:01, we all hear about it. Make your old dog young again. Pick up Arthrodex at NutriensToGo.com. And while you're at it, make yourself young again with a Healthy Body Start Pack. NutriensToGo.com. NutriensToGo.com.
History buffs. This tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place in Bremerton, Washington, August 1944.
Bremerton was the best liberty port of the war, and I had a secret weapon for enjoying every second of it. Roller skates. No kidding. Now, right outside the gates of the base was a sailor bar, and almost every sailor would stop right there, but not me. I kept right on going till I get to the roller rink. Most of the guys thought I was nuts, but I wasn't. You see, there was no better way to meet girls than to skate around in a rink in your dress blues. Back in those days, I was limber enough to do tricks like wrapping one leg around my neck while I was skating on the other. Yeah, most of the guys thought I was crazy. They'd see me leaving the base with my skates and just shake their heads, but heck, I laughed all the way to the bank.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. Talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. We are working on a very significant issue, which is how to save your loved ones and my loved ones, by golly, from COVID. And that's the pandemic of the moment that we're facing. Been going through it for a couple of years. Don't know why we're going through it for a couple of years, but maybe it has been weaponized, so we'll be going through it for a long time. But how do we deal with it? Do we get the jab? That's what everybody is demanding of us. But let's set that aside and not argue that point for the time being. But let's talk about what we can do to manage this COVID virus, what do they call it? A novel COVID virus. I love that term. Could mean just about anything when it gets right down to it. So first thing we need to do is get healthy. And first thing we want to do is get rid of our pre-existing conditions like the diabetes and obesity and pull ourselves back together and get calm. What's next?
You have to move your body. That your immune system needs that, your psyche needs that, your body needs that, your emotions need that. So move around in nature, so on and so forth. And then you have to have a good nutrition. So I support organic food, and my quip is that the extra money you spend on organic, you will save on hospital bills.
And Michael Olson's first or third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't.
Yes, exactly. And I say fresh food. Ask yourself, when was the last time this has been alive? A potato is nourishing. A potato chip is an attempt at a slow version of suicide.
There you go. Simple as that. Having once worked at a potato chip factory, I could attest to that. Okay. Supplement.
Okay. In this book, I outline a very simple supplement regimen because I am not a supplement person. I believe, you know, we should have fresh organic food, and that's going to be the major part of it. But what they have found is that vitamin C is helpful in being healthy and preventing it. Vitamin D3 is very important. And there are many powerful studies to show that your risk of should you get COVID, which a lot of people get, they don't even have symptoms, right? But should you get COVID, your risk of becoming seriously ill from COVID is much greater if you have vitamin D3 deficiency. That's well documented.
Yeah.
And then zinc turns out to be very important. Zinc and quercetin. And they've outlined a biochemical mechanism for that. So I advocate that simple four-supplement regimen.
Simple as that. Four supplements. What about melatonin?
Melatonin is an interesting thing. Melatonin is what your brain secretes when it gets dark. And your body says, oh, gee, it's all dark out. I must be sleepy. Let's go to bed. And that's one reason why you don't really want to go on your computer near bedtime, because it has blue light, and that stops your brain from secreting melatonin. So maybe you get those blue blockers, but it's better just not to go on it. But as it turns out, and it seems logical, for many years it was, oh, melatonin for sleep. And suddenly, a while ago, it was like, oh my God, melatonin is anti-inflammatory. It will decrease the inflammation in your body. Makes sense, right? When does your body heal and get rid of its inflammation?
When you're sleeping.
In the night, right? So I am a person who, melatonin's a signal, which is a hormone inside the body. And I believe we should let our body make its own signals, except in special situations. So while many advocate taking melatonin every night, I believe personally I would only take it when I needed it. But if you did have early COVID, right, your first sniffle, your first, I don't feel quite right, then you might want to take melatonin for a week.
Yeah, and then wake up and see how you feel then.
Yeah, exactly.
So supplementation, four simple things to take, and then moving on. What if you get exposed to COVID? Your wife has COVID.
Yes, and what I'm hearing now is that the most common site of transmission is the home. Yeah. And I'm also hearing, for those of you in incredible fear, wearing three masks while you take a walk outside in the park, I'm hearing you have to be in an enclosed room for 3 hours with somebody who has COVID before you can contract it. I haven't confirmed that or not. But
so it's really home or classroom or something like
somewhere
that.
Somewhere where you're really there for a while. It's not I ran in the grocery store and I ran back out.
Okay.
So I advocate the what they call post-exposure prophylaxis regimen. And what that means is, gee, I got exposed to COVID. And I don't want to catch it. And so the cornerstone of that regimen is just a couple doses of ivermectin. And there's plenty of studies to show that that makes it much, much, much less likely that you would get symptomatic from COVID as well.
Have you heard about that study in Africa with all of those people who take COVID and the death rate is almost nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. You hear about these studies. Take ivermectin. Yeah.
Now, for those people who do get COVID, even with ivermectin, the death rate is similar to those that don't take ivermectin, which is kind of interesting, which indicates to me, at least, that it's a great preventative.
Well, you're bringing up a very important point, which is the qualifying condition. So I also believe there's some efficacy to hydroxychloroquine. But for both of those, they are most effective when you get it right away. It's okay. Like you got a fire extinguisher, you got a fire in your kitchen. When's the most effective time? Right away, right? If you wait...
Before you call the fire department.
Right.
Everything,
and your house is on fire, then it won't be as effective. But they still believe and have shown that there's benefit later in the course of ivermectin. But ivermectin is cheap, it's safe, it's non-toxic. So there's very little reason not to take it at the first suspicion. And then if it's like, poo, well, I guess I was just a sniffles or seasonal allergies or, you know, something I ate, then you can stop.
Okay, and if people hang around to the end of the program, we'll tell them how to find ivermectin. Now, you brought up something very interesting, which is the immediacy. So it pays for us, even healthy people, to watch for signs.
Yes.
What do we watch for?
Okay, well, that's interesting, and I have an entire chapter on this in my book.
In your book called How to Save Your Loved Ones from COVID.
Yes, and... That's the interesting thing is that for the most part, that doesn't look COVID doesn't look much different from a cold or flu. Now, there's certain things that sometimes occur, but not always, but that then become highly suspicious, which is a complete loss of taste and a complete loss of smell.
Okay.
But otherwise, when you look down these lists of symptoms,
it's just like
how do you tell it from a cold or flu? Yeah. Not so easy.
But if you do have signs of a cold or flu, pay attention.
Exactly.
Okay, now it's when you're... Now, what do we do if we have those signs?
Well, if you think that might be COVID, then you take some prophylactic ivermectin. Actually, if you think you have COVID early, then you take 5 days of ivermectin, plus these supplements, some of them at a higher dose. You rest, you stay away from people, and relax. And then what I do recommend, especially for people at risk, is that they start taking their vital signs so that should they be going in the wrong direction, we would know right away. So one of the real red flags that COVID is going bad is that the rate at which you breathe starts getting faster.
Okay, so that's something that you can...
You can count, right? You know, you get your loved one over there and say, I'm just going to watch TV and I want you to count how many times I breathe in a minute, right? Mm-hmm. Then there's a little gizmo. You can get one for $50 called a pulse oximeter. And I have a whole section on how to use it, where to get it, blah, blah, blah. But basically, the pulse oximeter measures how much oxygen is in your blood. More technically, what percentage of your hemoglobin, which is what carries the oxygen, has oxygen on it. And one of the big red flags in COVID is that number starts to drop. So if you have COVID, you're at risk, you're a little worried that you're going to get real sick, you're watching that number. If that number drops below 92, okay, that red alert, wah, wah, wah.
So if you don't have a pulse oximeter, you watch for drowsiness?
It gets a little trickier then, huh?
Okay.
I would watch the respiratory rate then and understand if you have a fever, the respiratory rate's going to go up. But that's why it's better to have a doctor in place. Yep. And you definitely want to have the stuff on the shelf for the treatment of COVID. You don't want to be running around like, I got a call from a gentleman this morning. I need some ivermectin and I need it now. What do I do? You know, that's not going to happen.
You have to be prepared.
Like you have to be prepared. And I do want to say, take home message, jabbed or unjabbed, if you have the means of early treatment on the shelf, ready to go, your risk of suffering from, or your loved ones suffering from a COVID infection and getting seriously ill is very, very low. I don't have anxiety at all. I think you can hear it when I talk about it. You know, COVID's not the boogeyman to me.
And you are prepared.
I am prepared.
Okay. There it is, folks. Big clue. Okay, so you recognize the signs. They're all there. And you do have COVID. Then what do you do? And things are getting serious. How do you know when it's getting serious?
Yeah. So at a certain point, there is a certain point at which you say, wow, I cannot handle this at home. I need to go down to the hospital. Okay. The art is to know when you reach that point. If you treat early, you're much more likely to never have to worry about that issue. But when to go to the hospital is if you can't take care of yourself and there's nobody there, if the person is like what they say, obtunded, in other words, they're out of it, you know, they're gorked out because they're not getting enough oxygen or whatever. But the main signs are, I'm breathing too fast, and my pulse oximeter level reading dropped 92 or below for more than an hour, assuming healthy lungs. Some people, they live at 92, in which case it would be, well, it dropped to, you know, 87 or something. So that's why you need to be ready with these ways of knowing. Otherwise, you're on the phone and, you know, do you have COVID? I think I have COVID. You know, you're talking to the ER nurse, and the ER nurse is
going,
stay out of here, man. We don't want that stuff down here.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they finally only treat you. There's no other illness like this where the medical system says, well, you know, just stay away until you're so sick, you're really at risk for dying, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't do that with the flu.
So that's the way it is with the medical establishment. They don't want you there.
In the moment.
So be forewarned.
Yes, be forewarned. If you go down there and you're a little bit sick, they're just going to send you home. And I have a profound distrust of the testing. And you certainly don't want to get a test and wait 3 days to see if it's COVID before you start treating yourself, because early treatment is the key. If there's one phrase to take away from what I have to say is, early treatment is the key. Be ready. Then you don't have to worry. Jabbed or unjabbed, you don't have to worry.
Early warning system, folks.
Yeah, it's just like anything. I have my earthquake preparedness kit here, so I'm ready if it happens. I have my fire preparedness kit. I have a plan, right? It's the same way.
Okay, where do we get ivermectin?
Ivermectin. I mean,
now, ladies and gentlemen, here's the deal. Because of this wonderful law that has been passed that gives the government the authority to give emergency approval to, what the heck is the name of that thing?
Emergency use authorization?
Yeah, emergency use authorization. Gives the government authority to hand out drugs and pay for them with your money, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there it is. We're going to spend your money on these drugs and give them to you. Now, as long as there is not another viable treatment alternative to COVID, then the government is free to give you the jabs and pay for them with your money. Okay. But if there is another treatment option, all that government money goes away, disappears. So there's a tremendous amount of effort at chasing away any viable alternative treatment to COVID. That's just the way it is. So if you call up your doctor and ask for ivermectin, he's going to fall over in his chair to get away from you. So what do we do, Dr. Arnold?
You have to educate yourself. That's the first step. And I wrote this book, which is pretty easy to read, with that intention. Secondly, you can go to a website I consider responsible, the Frontline Critical Care Coalition, FLCCC. And I believe they're responsible. They have a section, how to get ivermectin, and there's a section in my book, how to get ivermectin.
Or you can go to Africa, and they hand it out to everybody.
In Mexico, it's over the counter.
In Mexico, it is?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, there it is. Dr. Michael Arnold and his book, How to Save Your Loved Ones from COVID. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you'd love to do that, wouldn't you? So be prepared. Get ready. We don't know where this stuff is coming from. We don't know who... We don't know anything about it, really.
What, the virus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it could be here and gone tomorrow, but it doesn't look like it at this time. So be prepared. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Dr. Michael Arnold.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you, doctor. Remember, Michael Olson's second law of the food chain, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.